authority to interpret God's law. They've seen Jesus cast out demons, still storms, feed crowds, but they still struggle to put it all together. If you'd like to open to Mark 8 on page 999 of the Church Bibles, which we saw dramatised, at this point, the disciples are just starting to see a little, just starting to understand. So Mark 8, I'm looking from middle of verse 27 there. Jesus actually brings things to a head. Doesn't just let them cruise with this, he actually brings it to a head and he asks them. On the way to Caesarea Philippi, he asks, so who do people say that I am? And the disciples answer, well, some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. You know. Still others, one of the prophets. You know, so the people around there have all sorts of different opinions about who Jesus is. The people around us have all sorts of opinions about who Jesus is. Some people see Jesus as irrelevant. Increasingly, people see Jesus as offensive. Now, Jesus could have spent a long time fleshing out the different options of who different people out there saw him as, but he doesn't do that. Jesus makes it personal. Jesus asks a critical question of the first disciples, and Jesus would ask the same question of you, the same question of me. Jesus asks, verse 29, but what about you? Who do you say I am? Who do you say Jesus is? And Simon Peter either steps forward or is pushed forward, and he says, you are the Christ, you are the Messiah. Christ is Greek, Messiah is Hebrew. It means you are the anointed one. Christ Messiah means you are God's chosen king. So Peter is declaring, you, Jesus, are the one with authority from God over everything. And after all this time with Jesus' authority right there in front of him, Peter finally sees the blindingly obvious. Jesus has the authority of God. Jesus is the Christ, God's king and ruler. As God's Christ, as Jesus has authority over storms, authority over sickness, authority over matter itself. You think of those loaves. But more personally, if Jesus is the Christ, he has authority over Peter. Total authority. If Jesus is God's Christ, he has authority over me. If Jesus is God's Christ, he has authority over you. If Jesus is God's Christ, he's the one with the authority to say what is right. The one with the authority to say what is wrong. If Jesus is the Christ, that following Jesus doesn't just mean taking hints from him every now and then. If Jesus is the Christ, following Jesus means obeying him, seeking to walk his way in everything. See, Jesus' authority has been right there in front of Peter for ages. And now he can see it. Now Peter recognises who Jesus is. His eyes have been opened, or have they? Does he really see? Maybe Peter's like the blind man, who could see a bit. He could see a bit, but people still look like trees. He can't see properly yet. See, Peter claims that Jesus is the Christ. So Jesus, he says, you are the one with the authority. And then Peter wants to put limits on Jesus' authority. It's absurd. One moment Peter declares, you are the Christ, the boss, the one in charge, the one with the authority. And the next moment Peter's telling Jesus that Jesus can't really be in charge of saying where he's going to go. Jesus can't really be in charge of saying what will happen to him. Peter wants Jesus to be the Christ, but only if Peter can tell the Christ what he should do. If Jesus is the Christ, brothers and sisters, we do not tell Jesus what he should do. If Jesus is the Christ, Jesus tells us what we should do. See, Peter really wants a Christ who will lead him to victory and triumph and success and glory. And Peter is shocked at the idea that the Christ would choose to go through suffering, rejection, death. It's not just Peter, is it? Let's be honest. We can all be like Peter sometimes. We want the Christ we follow to bring maybe triumph, success and glory, or in our laid-back Margaret River, we at least want Christ to bring comfort and peace and acceptance in this life. But what does Jesus say? If we look at verse 31. Jesus, as soon as they saw he was the Christ, began to teach them that the Son of Man, that is Jesus, must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. And then Jesus says in verse 34, calling all the crowd and the disciples to him, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. If anyone would come after me, says Jesus, he must deny himself, take up his cross and follow me. This does not say, Jesus does not say, if anyone would be one of my 12 apostles. He does not say, if anyone would be a pastor. He does not say, if anyone would be a ministry leader or an elder. Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, anyone who wants to follow Jesus. This is for all followers of Jesus. So what does it say here? I think we often hear that it says all followers of Jesus might possibly be asked to miss out on something or do a little bit that's hard. But that's not what Jesus says. Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. This was radical when Jesus said it. That's why Peter reacted that way. This is radical now. Deny yourself. Is that the message of our culture? No. We live in a culture which says, indulge yourself. Express your desires. You are encouraged to obey your desires. What does Jesus say? Deny yourself. It's not going to just blend in, is it? Jesus says, take up your cross. Jesus' first listeners knew that there was only one reason why you would ever take up your cross. If you have a cross, where are you going? You're going to be crucified. If you are taking up your cross, you're accepting that you count yourself as dead. Jesus willingly gave up his life for his people, for us. and Jesus calls us to follow him. Can I encourage you to read through the second half of Mark as Jesus talks more about this? If you're at the Mark drama last week, think back to what you saw. The pain of Jesus' agony in the garden. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will. The betrayal. The disciples flee and deny him. The disciples fail Jesus. The sham trials, the soldiers spit on Jesus. Physical torture. Crucifixion. And Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Should we be surprised when it is hard to follow Jesus? We can be so slow to understand. Just like the original disciples were so slow to understand. Over the next few months, we're going to spend time with Jesus as he teaches his disciples what it means to follow him. We're going to listen in as Jesus teaches his disciples what it means to follow him, to take up the cross. There's quite a bit there because Jesus had to explain a lot to the disciples about what it meant because his disciples were slow to understand. Kind of like I say. I want to bring four observations about following Jesus, four observations about us being like Jesus' first disciples. First one, the first disciples were a mess. They were slow to see what was in front of their faces. They fought, they argued. They took ages to understand what should have been obvious. They slept when they should have been awake and praying. And when they should have been calm in the boat, they were all panicking. They deserted Jesus in his hour of need. The disciples failed. The disciples were unholy. Here's the picture from a couple of weeks ago. The disciples were messed up cardboard boxes. Jesus had to ask his disciples, do you still not see or understand? You have eyes but fail to see, ears but fail to hear. But Jesus worked powerfully in and through these messed up people. Do not doubt that the mighty Christ of God can work through messed up people here in this church. Messed up people like me. King Jesus, the Christ, was more than able to work through messed up people like his first disciples. King Jesus, the Christ, is more than able to work through messed up people like us. The first disciples were a mess. And secondly, the first disciples needed Jesus' death. There is no way those first disciples did well enough to deserve to be with Jesus when he comes in power with his holy angels. No way. The first disciples had so many opportunities and they messed them up again and again and again. The first disciples deserve punishment, not rewards. There's no way the first disciples deserve eternal life. But Jesus went to the cross and took the punishment for them. That's why the Christ went to suffer and die, to save his people. He died to give life for his people. As he said, he did not come for the righteous, but for sinners. Jesus said he came to give his life as a ransom for many. Which was good news for the disciples. Because they need that ransom. They need Jesus to pay for them. It's good news for me. Because without him, I'm up the creek. I need that ransom paid for me. And it is good news for you. If you will trust Jesus and let him pay the ransom for you. So the first disciples were a mess. The first disciples needed Jesus' death. And the first disciples found that following Jesus is harder than they imagined. Now, as Jesus spoke about suffering, Peter rebuked him. He didn't get it. We shy away from suffering. We shy away from hard things, shy away from hard conversations. We shy away from the hard work of reconciliation. When Peter tempted Jesus to avoid the suffering needed for reconciliation, what did Jesus say? Get behind me, Satan. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. Isn't that a challenge? I find that a challenge. Loving one another is hard. Loving one another will cost. Jesus never gave us the message it would be otherwise. Last week, John Powell challenged us all to pursue holiness. Pursuing holiness is hard. Pursuing holiness will cost. It's worth it. As children of our Holy Father. But as Jesus says, if anyone will come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow. And finally, the disciples found that not only is following Jesus harder than they imagined, it is better than they imagined. Got to do the next verse. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it. Jesus did not stay dead. Jesus rose triumphant on the third day. Despite the trials, despite the arguments, despite their failure, most of those disciples did keep following Jesus amidst all the stumbles. They kept looking to Jesus as their hope and salvation. They kept following Jesus as their Christ and their King. And the risen Jesus used these messed up, half-blind, slow-learning disciples to transform the planet, to take his gospel out to the known world. These people, these same people who struggle so much, took the wonderful news that Jesus is the Christ, that Jesus is God's King, and that Jesus is the King who dies for us. They took this news out to people everywhere, people who were messed up and in need of Jesus, like them. God did wonders through those messed up disciples. But that wasn't the end for the disciples. We've got to remember that. Now, they are with Jesus. Now the disciples are no longer blind or even partially blind. Now they can see clearly. The first disciples have completed their time on this earth and are now with the risen Christ, rejoicing in his glory and looking forward to when his rule is unchallenged as King of the new creation. And they see the full power of the Christ. And that is our destination if we follow Jesus. Can I urge you? Follow Jesus. Recognize your need. We are all messed up. and need Jesus so badly. Trust in King Jesus' death to pay your ransom, to wash you clean. Keep following Jesus when you feel the pain. Keep following Jesus when you feel the weight of the cross. Keep following Jesus because the risen Jesus works through his messed up followers. And the risen Christ will bring us to celebrate in his kingdom forever.